Are you saying the eyes don't blink at all in those conditions?
In those conditions, no.
Don't the eyeballs dry out?
That's their business. That's their business. Have you watched a little baby, madam? It doesn't also blink very often.
Them, but I haven't watched
their eyes.
No time to watch them.
No, we don't notice it. A few of these things you can learn only from the baby, nobody else. Mm. Breathing, only the baby can teach us, pranayama. Mm-hmm. No yoga teacher. Mm-hmm. We are terribly worried about what's called full yoga breath. Mm. I don't know. I didn't realize that such a thing existed. Till I bumped into that and its opposite. Most people do not know how to breathe with their abdomen. Mm-hmm. And the abdomen is always tense. I mean, that's supposed to be a very sprightly way of keeping holding yourself up. And then they are taught in the yoga classes, first the diaphragmatic breathing, and then the chest breathing, and then the top breathing, and then the full yoga breath. I said, my God, it's quite natural. Why must I call it yoga breath? It's because the other thing is unlearned. Mm. Hmm? I have to learn what is yoga breath. If you watch the baby, I was asked by somebody. He nearly floored me. I didn't know. I didn't know how to answer. I told him I had come into contact with this yoga breath, and so I knew that when you inhale, first the stomach bulges out and then the chest expands right up to the collarbones. But then he said, when you exhale, from where does it start? You exhale, where does it start? Air comes out. He says, does it start below or does it start above? I've not watched it. When I look at the baby, it doesn't seem to have all these problems at all. Just boom, 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 it goes the whole thing.
I remember watching the babies when they were sleeping. The breath was so very gentle.
Yeah, it's beautiful, yeah. Beautiful. Yeah. That's yoga breath.
Yeah.
That's yoga breath. And also, total attention only the baby has. You and I do not have at all. I don't think with all our yoga practice we still can match. The baby comes along and it is interested in that little pen and it tickles with it. And then suddenly it hears the mother, drops it, looks at the mother, and finish. So far as the baby is concerned, it could be non-existent. Mm. Completely and totally non-existent. That is what is called living in the present.
Is that not the same with a dog?
Pardon?
Is that not the same with a dog?
You have all animals, yes.
Most.
I mean, also, same.
But are animals more advanced than
this? I'm quite definite, sir. I'm quite definite. Sometimes they ask me how to live in the present. I tell them it is possible as long as it is a caravan.
As long as what?
As long as it is a caravan. Can you live in the present? Yes, as long if it is a caravan, yes. You give a birthday present. And if you give her a caravan for the birthday present, she can live in the caravan. She can live in the present.
It's a weak one.
Okay.
Because when the question arises, how am I going to live in the present? It's already past. So that kind of living in the present is not possible. Living in the birthday present is possible. Provided it's a caravan.
bad about meditating with the eyes closed?
Madam, it's nothing. It's not bad. You can drift away a lot more easily with a lot more confidence.
Drift away.
Anywhere.
You mean stop focusing?
The whole thing is gone. I mean, with eyes closed, I can go away to anywhere I like in half a minute.
I mean, it stops thoughts more with eyes open.
Mm. That's why it seems to be unsatisfactory.
People don't like it.
People don't like it because I am forced to be here. Whereas if the moment I close my eyes, I can jump on to the wings of imagination and walk off.
Mm-hmm. Would that also apply to chanting a mantra? To chanting?
Chanting aloud can be a distraction. Because I'm still, looking outside. Now, it's a good question. I have often noticed Swami Shivananda chant in a different way, except when he was leading the kirtan. When he was leading the chorus, he chanted aloud, as we do. But when he was part of the chorus, as for instance, if he is leading the chorus and he is following in chorus, there are occasions when we had all night kirtan, like Shivaratri, Om Namah Shivaya, Om Namah, and everybody else would be jumping and clapping and, to keep sleep away. I used to watch him. He would just sit in a corner. Om Namah Shivaya, 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 Om Namah Shivaya. It's more, the sound is heard more within than outside. The difference difference between Om, Om, you can even feel the vibrations in your abdomen, solar plexus.
You said that all emotions were of the ego.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you chant Om, I imagine that's a peaceful emotion. Do you differentiate?
You're right. We don't call it emotion, we call it devotion.
okay.
Devotion is movement in depth, emotion is movement out. Devotion is depth movement. Emotion is externalized movement. Yes, you see, for instance, the devotees, when they sing and dance and do all sorts of things, it also looks like emotion. If one is not careful, it can become emotion. But if one is careful, it can be devotion.
Is it possible to be devoted to one other person? Is it possible to be devoted, or is that always a self-seeking relationship? You spoke of the mother's love for the child, and that's the kind of a relationship in which there can be devotion.
Yeah, I don't think anyone else can answer that question. It's possible, yes, definitely.
Have you ever known of any person who has been devoted to one other person? A guru, certainly.
One other person? What do you mean, one other person? To another person?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
To a guru, I can see. One would be devoted to a guru, and that would be a selfless love, wouldn't it?
Need not be.
Well, it could be.
I could be, yes.
Yes. Yeah. But
so anything could be.
Anything.
Anything could be, yes. So that person does not mean anything. It does not matter at all who that other person is. Mm-hmm. Is it possible for me to drop the me and all its motivation?
Yes.
That's all that matters.
Well, and then if there would be sexual activity between these two, between these people, that would not be a dream.
It could be too. I mean, as a matter of fact, why not? I only suggested that it's unlikely or,
yes.
You know, it doesn't prevail very often.
Mm-hmm.
As a matter of fact, it was one of the, somebody mentioned Tantra.
Yes.
That was the idea of Tantra again,
mm-hmm.
where unconsummated sexual activity, non-physical sexual activity, was considered to be a very holy thing.
Yes.
Where there is no drain, but we are in a state of high ecstasy all the time.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
When one loses one's identity, a sort of platonic love.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Is it like the eyes that are looking, but not looking?
Right.
What do you mean? The eyes that are looking but not looking. You're talking about the eyes being open and looking.
Oh,
I see.
At
the rug, but not open.
Yes, there is no eye to see it.
Yes.
There is no ego sense to see that.
Yes.
And so, even when two people are in love with each other,
mm-hmm.
The other is not there because the eye is not there.
Yes.
Yes. It's not often found in the world.
There are other worlds maybe where it is found. One would hope.
And so one has to look within all the time to see where the ego sense arises.
Yes.
And that is the whole purpose, if one may say so, of all the yoga practice, even the asanas and the pranayama and so on. Isn't there something beyond me that is alive? Isn't there something beyond me that is totally intelligent, totally wise, far wiser than the me? When that is discovered, then all the anxieties and neuroses that the I produces drop away. Tension drops away, and therefore the drain on energy drops away. Then it's possible for this personality to live and function here in the world as a normal, apparently a normal person.
Would it be true to say that like the stages of consciousness in Kundalini are stages of release of the eye?
The stages of... Yes? The spiral has been going down and down and out and out and out.
Mm.
And it's coming back. It's coming back. Reversing its movement. It is still not beyond the eye. Till, according to the Hatha Yogis, till the consciousness has reached the Ajna, the mind center, only there it is possible for the whole thing to be offered up to the Divine. The crossing of the ego barrier is not a play. Also, in pranayama, we'll discuss this when we come to the detailed techniques of the pranayama. without straining, without anxiety, you hold the breath as long as possible. Shall I repeat it? Without straining and without anxiety, you hold the breath as long as possible. Something, somewhere, somebody, somehow, within you or outside you, God knows where, twists your ears, that breathe. And you realize that is beyond me. That's the purpose of pranayama. The discovery of that which is beyond me and which is the protector of my life, of this life.
Same doing as asanas
too. Asanas too. That which enables this body to be functioned is beyond me. What am I worried about? When he is standing on the edge of the chair, that intelligence, that life force knows what to do. And it will do it. It does it. And when you hold your breath without anxiety and without tension, anxiety produces tension. And yet, as long as possible, which means, in other words, I do not want to breathe and I do not want to die. I do not want to live. I do not want to die. Is the formulation correct? I do not want to live. I do not want to die. You are holding your breath. I do not want to live. I do not want to die. What happens? You naturally, I don't want to let the breath, let this thing go, open the nostrils. I don't want to live. I do not want to die either. I know I don't want to die. And therefore there is no anxiety to breathe or not to breathe. Both. And therefore there is no tension. You are completely relaxed. You are holding the breath. Something builds up inside and after a few seconds say, it is right, I'm going to breathe. Who is it that prompted you to let go? That is prana. And as long as it wants to live in this body, it will live. It takes, to be rather blunt, it doesn't seem to take any notice of the ego. Like sun shining, rain falling. That prana which lives in that body does not take any notice of the ego. It goes on living. And the ego messes up, doing all sorts of funny things, crazy things in this body, with this body. And even then that prana says, all right, you silly idiot, I'll fix it for you. I'll fix it for you. And that is called sickness. What is called sickness or pain? The healthy reaction of this life force prana in its attempt to put things right. The mess, in its attempt to clear the mess that has been created by the ego. So pain also, pain and sickness and whatever it is, are also the manifestations of the power of prana. So that there is a, if you want to be completely free of pain, a bullet into the head, and then the body can be cut into pieces. You don't feel a thing. You're dead. Dead. So that as long as the body is alive and kicking, as long as the body is alive, it will be kicking. It's good. So pain, suffering, illness, sickness, and all these are also manifestations of the ego. And as we discussed this morning, even death is one of those brilliant actions of the ego, of prana, sorry. Sickness, pain are all the functions of prana, and even death is a function of prana, which says, right, you've had enough.
But the dead body is still full of prana.
Right, thank you. So that's another joke. No motion and no activity is possible without prana. And prana being cosmic exists in the dead body also. And in the dead body, it performs the function of decomposing. In the living body, it performs the function of composing, collecting together. In the dead body, it performs the function of decomposing.
I've heard of yogis that withdraw the life force.
Hibernating animal, yes.
They don't control, or they don't. Would that signify that they become one with that intelligence? Possibly?
Hopefully. Not possibly, hopefully. Uh-huh. Hopefully. But many of them do it, sort of egotistically. Mm-hmm. And therefore they reap their own benefit.
The prana that's in the live body and the prana that's in the dead body
are different. The functioning is different. Like the prana and the apana.
One is a different form of the same thing?
No. The prana has no form. The function of the prana in the living body is different from the functioning of the prana in the dead body. Provided you realize that even in a living body, the apana function goes on. Right? It's only there's a quantitative difference. It's a balance. Yes. There's a quantitative difference. In this living body, there is elimination even now, but the elimination is of a few dead cells every day, a few dead material every day, waste material every day. But when what you call death happens, then the entire body is discarded, eliminated. Decomposition otherwise takes place even now. Yes? Even in the living body, all the time decomposition takes place.
Is there any form of yoga in which one inflicts pain on oneself?
Shall we give it a new name? Stupid yoga.
That all the saints who tortured themselves were mistaken.
I suppose. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Poor things. Yeah. These perversions come in sooner or later. You see, if you had followed two parts of the discussion, one, that even in sexual rapport, the ego can be transcended. Mm-hmm. And that's number one. Number two is pain is a manifestation of prana. If these two factors were understood, then you also see how both these can run away with you, these concepts.
Yes.
So one set saying, that's right, that's a glorious form of yoga. Now, we'll love each other, and in that love we'll discover that which the prana or the intelligence or the self. They start like that, And then very soon they discover that they are, of course, very loving towards each other, but there is no discovery, self-discovery. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That they are lost in this pleasure. Mm-hmm. And then there is a reaction. He comes along and says, my God, these fellows are finished. They are hedonistic, and then, you know, they are pleasure-loving. They are lost souls. They eat and they drink and then they have sex and so on. They are lost in all this, in pleasure. No, that's not the way. In and through pain we must have self-knowledge. Huh? I now reject pleasure and resort to pain. Also possible. It's also possible. If you stick a pin in your thigh, where is the pain felt and who feels this pain? What reacts and how? You can of course get beyond the me, because it is the me that characterizes that as pain, whereas to the prana it's a challenge or heaven knows what. Like we were discussing the reaction of the dog in pain. It's so one with the pain, it has not torn itself off from the pain. So it is the mind, it is me that says it is pain. And if the me was not there to call it pain, I can discover it, of course. It's easy. The same thing applies to pleasure and the same thing applies to pain. And so at one stage they tried to discover the self through the experience of pleasure. And at another stage when they found that was dangerous, they turned to this, pain. But then, when you are a masochist, you go on beating yourself and it's lovely. They all clap and say, oh, what a marvelous woman she is. She's just saying.
You get pleasure from pain. Preferably.
All these tricks don't work really. They're all tricks. Maybe they work for some people, yes. One cannot dismiss them completely offhand. Maybe they work for some.
Well, in certain cultures, perhaps.
Certain cultural
ideals.
With which you make some yogurt. No other cultures. It can work with some individuals. All these can work with some and not work with others. Asato ma sadgamaya tamaso ma jyotirgamaya tyorma amritam gamaya. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamudachyate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnameva Vashishyate Om Shanti Shanti.